understand what the hell you're doing. I wipe my face with my shirt and glance at him. His face is a jumbled mixture of sadness and sorrow, and I don't understand anything he's feeling. What is your problem with me, Warren? I've never been anything but nice to you. I've even been nice to your bitch of a girlfriend, and believe me, that takes effort. He nods in agreement. I know, he says, exasperated. I know you are a nice person. He laces his fingers together and stretches his arms out, then brings them back down with a heavy sigh. And I know you have good intentions. You have a good heart and a pretty good right swing, he says, grinning slyly. I guess that's why I'm so mad, though. I know you have a good heart, so why in the hell haven't you moved out yet? His words hurt me more now than the vulgar ones he spit at me 5 minutes ago. If you and Ridge wanted me gone this bad, why did you both wait until this weekend to tell me? My question seems to catch Warren off guard, because his eyes cut to mine briefly before he looks away again. He doesn't answer that question, though. Instead, he begins to prepare one of his own. Has Ridge ever told you the story of how he met Maggie? He asks. I shake my head, completely confused by the direction this conversation has taken. I was 17, and Ridge had just turned 18, he says. He leans back against the couch and stares down at his hands. I recall Ridge saying he began dating Maggie when he was 19, but I keep silent and let him continue. We had been dating for about 6 weeks, and... scratch that thought. Can no longer keep silent. We? I ask hesitantly. As in you and Ridge? No, dumbass, as in me and Maggie. I try to hide my shock, but he doesn't look at me long enough to even see my reaction. Maggie was my girlfriend first. I met her at a fundraising event for children who were deaf. I was there with my parents, who were both on the committee. He pulls his hands behind his head and leans against the couch. Ridge was with me the first time I saw her. We both thought she was the most beautiful thing we had ever laid eyes on. But fortunately for me, my eyes landed on her about 5 seconds before his did, so I called dibs. Of course, neither one of us expected to actually have a chance with her. I mean, you've seen her, she's incredible. He pauses for a moment and props a leg on the table in front of us. Anyway, I spent the whole day flirting with her, charming her with my good looks and my killer body. I laugh, but only out of courtesy. She agreed to go on a date with me, so I told her I'd pick her up that Friday night. I took her out, made her laugh, took her back home, and kissed her. It was great, so I asked her out again, and she agreed. I took her out for a second date, then a third date. I liked her. We got along well, she laughed at my jokes. She also got along with Ridge, which scored major points in my book. The girl and the best friend have to get along, or one of the two will suffer. Luckily, we all got along great. On our fourth date, I asked her if she wanted to make it official, and she agreed. I was stoked because I knew she was by far the hottest girl I'd ever dated or ever would date. I couldn't let her slip away, especially before I was able to go all the way with her. He laughs. I remember saying that to Ridge the same night. Told him if there was one girl on earth I needed to de-virginize, it was Maggie. Told him I'd go on 100 dates with her if that's what it took. He turned his back to me and signed, "What about 101? I laughed because I didn't understand what the hell Ridge meant. I didn't understand at the time that he liked her the way he did, and I never really understood all the little gems he would spout. Still don't. Looking back on the whole situation and the way he would sit there and have to listen to the punk-ass things I said about her, I'm surprised he didn't punch me sooner than he did. He punched you? I ask. Why, because you talked about screwing her? He shakes his head, and a look of guilt washes over him. No, he says quietly. Because I did screw her. He sighs, but continues. We were staying the night at Ridge and Brennan's. Maggie spent a lot of time over there with me, and we had been dating for about 6 weeks. I know that's not long in virgin weeks, but it's a damn eternity in guy weeks. We were lying in bed together, and she told me she was ready to go all the way. But before she would have sex with me, there was something she needed to tell me. She said I had a right to know, and she wouldn't feel right continuing a relationship until I was fully informed. I remember panicking, thinking she was about to tell me she was a dude or some shit like that. He glances at me and raises an eyebrow. Because, let's be honest, Sid, there are some really hot transvestite-looking dudes out there. He laughs and looks straight ahead again. That's when she told me about her illness, told me about the statistics, the fact that she didn't want children, the reality of how much time she had left. She said she wanted to lay the truth out for me because it wouldn't be fair to anyone who saw something long-term with her. She said the likelihood of her making it to the age of 40 or even 35 was small. She said she needed to be with someone who understood that, someone who accepted that. You didn't want that responsibility? I ask him. He shakes his head slowly. Sydney, I didn't care about the responsibility. I was a 17-year-old guy in bed with the most beautiful girl I had ever seen, and all she was asking me to do was agree to love her. When she mentioned the words future and husband and not wanting kids, it took all I had not to roll my eyes because in my head, those were a lifetime away. I would be with a million girls before then. I didn't know how to think that far ahead, so I just did what I thought any guy would do in that situation. I reassured her and told her that her illness didn't matter to me and that I loved her. Then I kissed her, took off her clothes, and took her virginity. He hangs his head in what looks like shame. After she left the next morning, I was bragging to Ridge about finally getting to bang a virgin. Probably went into way too much detail. I also mentioned the conversation we had beforehand and told him all about her illness. I was brutally honest with him to a fault sometimes. I told him that her whole situation kind of freaked me out and that I was going to give it 2 weeks before I broke up with her so I wouldn't look like such a douche. That's when he beat the living shit out of me. My eyes widen. Good for Ridge, I say. Warren nods. Yeah. Apparently he liked her a whole lot more than he let on, but he just kept his mouth shut and allowed me to make an ass of myself for the whole 6 weeks I dated her. I should have caught on about how he felt, but Ridge is a lot more selfless than I am. He would have never done anything to betray what we had, but after that night, he lost a whole lot of respect for me. And that hurt Sydney. He's like my brother. I felt like I had disappointed the one person I looked up to the most. So you broke up with Maggie and Ridge started dating her? Yes and no. We had a long conversation about it that afternoon, because Ridge is big on sharing his thoughts and shit. We agreed we had to honor the bro code, and it wouldn't really be good for us if he picked up and started dating a girl I had just screwed. But he liked her. He liked her a lot, and even though I knew it was hard for him, he waited until the term ended before he asked her out. The term? Warren nods. Yeah, don't ask where we came up with it, but we agreed 12 months was a decent length of time before the bro code became null. We figured enough time would have passed, and if he wanted to ask her out after a year, it wouldn't be so weird. By that time, she might have dated other people and wouldn't be going straight from my bed into Ridge's. As much as I could have tried to be cool about it, it would have been too weird, even for us. Did Maggie know how he felt about her during the 12 months? Warren shakes his head. Nope, Maggie never even knew he liked her like he did. He liked her so much he didn't go on a single date for the entire 12 months I made him wait. He had the date circled on a calendar. I saw it once in his room. He never mentioned her, never asked about her. But I'll be damned if the day that year was up, he wasn't knocking on her front door. And it took her a while to come around, especially knowing she would have to interact with me. But things eventually worked themselves out. She ended up with the right guy in the end, thanks to Ridge's persistence. I exhale. Wow, I say. Talk about devotion. He turns his head toward mine, and our eyes meet, Exactly, he says firmly, as if I just summed up his whole point. I have never in my life met another human being with more devotion than that man. He's the best damn thing that's ever happened to me, the best thing that's ever happened to Maggie. He pulls his feet up onto the couch and faces me full on. He's gone through hell and back for that girl, Sydney. All the hospital stays, driving back and forth to take care of her, promising her the world, and giving up so much of himself in return. And she deserves it. She's one of the purest, most selfless people I've ever met. And if there are two people who deserve each other in this world, it's the two of them. So when I see how he looks at you, it pains me. I saw the way the two of you watched each other at the party the other night. I saw the jealousy in his eyes every time you spoke to Brennan. I've never seen him struggle with his choice or the sacrifices he's made for Maggie until you showed up. He's falling in love with you, Sydney, and I know you know that. However, I also know his heart, and he'll never leave Maggie. He loves her. He would never do that to her. So seeing him torn apart because of the way he feels about you and knowing his life is with Maggie, I just don't understand why you're still here. I don't understand why you're putting him through that much pain. Every day you're still here, and I see him looking at you the same way he used to look at Maggie, it makes me want to shove you out the damn door and tell you to never come back. And I know that's not your fault. I know that. Hell, you didn't even know the half of what he's going through until tonight. But now you do. And as much as I love you and think you're one of the coolest damn chicks I've ever met, I also never want to see your face again. Especially now that you know the truth about Maggie. And forgive me if this is harsh, but I don't want you getting it into your head that the love you have for Ridge will be enough to hold you over until the day Maggie dies. Because Maggie isn't dying, Sydney. Maggie's living. She'll be around a lot longer than Ridge's heart could ever survive you. My head rolls forward into my hands as the sobs erupt from my chest. Warren's arm folds over my back, and he pulls me against him. I don't know who I'm crying for right now, but my heart hurts so much, I just want to rip it from my fucking chest and throw it over Ridge's balcony, because that's where this whole mess began.
Ridge. Maggie has been asleep for a couple of hours now, but I've yet to sleep. That's usually how it is when I'm with her in the hospital. After 5 years of sporadic stays, I've learned it's much easier not to sleep at all than it is to get a half-assed couple of hours. I open my laptop and pull up my messages to Sydney, then send her a quick hello to see if she's online. We haven't had a chance to discuss the fact that I asked her to move out, and I hate not knowing if she's okay. I know it's wrong to be messaging her at this point, but it seems even more wrong to leave things unsaid. She returns my message almost immediately, and the tone of it already relieves some of my worry. I don't know why I always expect she'll respond unreasonably, because she's never once shown a lack of maturity or regard for my situation. Sydney. Yeah, I'm here. How's Maggie? Me. She's good. She'll be discharged this afternoon. Sydney. That's good. I've been worried. Me. Thank you, by the way, for your help last night. Sydney. I wasn't much help. I felt like I was in the way more than anything. Me. You weren't. There's no telling what could have happened if you hadn't found her. I wait a moment for her to respond, but she doesn't. I guess we've reached the point in this conversation where one of us needs to bring up what we both know must be discussed. I feel responsible for this entire situation with her, so I bite the bullet and lay it out there. Me. Do you have a minute? I really have some things I'd like to say to you. Sydney. Yes, and likewise. I glance up at Maggie again, and she's still asleep in the same position. Having this conversation with Sydney in her presence, as innocent as it is, makes me uneasy. I take my laptop and walk out of the hospital room and into the empty hallway. I sit on the floor beside the door to Maggie's room and reopen my laptop. Me. The main thing I've appreciated about our time together over the last couple months is the fact that we've been upfront and consistent with each other. With that being said, I don't want you to leave with the wrong idea about why I need you to move out. I don't want you to think you did anything wrong. Sydney, I don't need an explanation. I've more than worn out my welcome, and you have enough to stress about without adding me into the mix. Warren found an apartment for me this morning, but it isn't available for a few days. Is it okay if I stay here until then? Me. Of course. When I said I needed you to move, I didn't literally mean today, I just meant soon. Before things become too hard for me to continue to walk away. Sydney. I'm sorry, Ridge. I didn't mean for any of this to happen. I know she's referring to the way we feel about each other. I know exactly what she means, because I didn't mean for it to happen either. In fact, I've done everything I could to stop it from happening, but somehow my heart never got the message. If I know it wasn't intentional on my part, I know it wasn't intentional on her part, so she has nothing to apologize for. Lee, why are you apologizing? Don't apologize. It's not your fault, Sydney. Hell, I'm not even sure it's my fault. Sydney, well, usually when something goes wrong, someone is at fault. Me. Things didn't go wrong with us. That's our problem. Things are way too right between us. We make sense. Everything about you feels so right, but... I pause for a few moments to gather my thoughts, because I don't want to say anything I'll regret. I inhale, then type out the best way to describe how I feel about our entire situation. Me. There isn't a doubt in my mind that we could be perfect for each other's life, Sydney. It's our lives that aren't perfect for us. Several minutes pass without a response. I don't know if I crossed the line with my comments, but however she's reacting to them, I needed to say what I had to say before I could let her go. I'm beginning to close my laptop when another message pops up from her. Sydney, if there's one thing I've learned from this whole experience, it's that my ability to trust wasn't completely broken by Hunter and Tori like I initially thought. You've always been upfront with me about how you feel. We've never skirted around the truth. If anything, we've worked together to find a way to change our course. I want to thank you for that. Thank you so much for showing me that guys like you actually exist and not everyone is a Hunter. She somehow has a way of making me sound so much more innocent than I actually am. I'm not nearly as strong as she thinks I am. Me. Don't thank me, Sydney. You shouldn't thank me because I failed miserably at trying not to fall in love with you. I swallow the lump forming in my throat and hit send. Saying what I've just said to her fills me with more guilt than the night I kissed her. Words can sometimes have a far greater effect on a heart than a kiss. Sydney. I failed first. I read her last message, and the finality of our imminent goodbye hits me full force. I feel it in every single part of me, and I'm shocked at the reaction I'm having to it. I lean my head against the wall behind me and try to imagine my world before Sydney entered it. It was a good world, a consistent world. But then she came along and shook my world upside down as if it were a fragile, breakable snow globe. Now that she's leaving, it feels as if the snow is about to settle and my whole world will be upright and still and consistent again. As much as that should make me feel at ease, it actually terrifies me. I'm scared to death that I'll never again feel any of the things I felt during the little time she's been in my world. Anyone who has made this much of an impact deserves a proper goodbye. I stand and walk back into Maggie's hospital room. She's still asleep, so I walk over to her bed, give her a light kiss on the forehead, and leave her a note explaining that I'm heading to the apartment to pack a few things before she's released. Then I leave to go and give the other half of my heart a proper goodbye. I'm outside Sydney's bedroom door, preparing to knock. We've said everything that needs to be said, and even a lot that probably shouldn't have been said. But I can't not see her one last time before I go. She'll be gone by the time I get back from San Antonio. I have no plans to contact her after today, so the fact that I know this is definitely goodbye is pressing on the walls of my chest. And it fucking hurts like hell. If I were to look at my situation from an outsider's point of view, I would be telling myself to forget about Sydney's feelings. that my loyalty should lie solely with Maggie. I would be telling myself to leave and that Sydney doesn't deserve a goodbye, even after all we've been through. Is life really that black and white, though? Can a simple right or wrong define my situation? Do Sydney's feelings not count in this mix somewhere despite my loyalty to Maggie? It doesn't seem right just to let her go. But it's unfair to Maggie not to just let her go. I don't know how I ever got myself into this mess to begin with, but I know the only way to end it is to break off all contact with Sydney. I knew the moment I held her hand last night that there wasn't a flaw in the world that could have stopped my heart from feeling what it was feeling. I'm not proud of the fact that Maggie doesn't make up all of my heart anymore. I fought it. I fought it hard because I didn't want it to happen. Now that the fight is finally coming to an end, I'm not even sure if I'm winning or losing. I'm not even sure which side I'm rooting for, much less which side I was on. I knock lightly on Sydney's door, then place my palms flat against the doorframe and look down, half of me hoping she refuses to open it, and half of me restraining myself from breaking down the damn door to get to her. Within seconds, we're face to face for what I know is the last time. Her blue eyes are wide with fear and surprise, and maybe even a small amount of relief when she sees me standing in front of her. She doesn't know how to feel about seeing me here, but her confusion is comforting. It's good to know I'm not alone in this, that we're both sharing the same mixture of emotions. We're in this together, Sydney and me. We're just two completely confused souls, scared of a much unwanted yet crucial goodbye.
Chapter 19. Sydney. Be still, heart. Please be still. I don't want him to be standing here in front of me. I don't want him to be looking at me, wearing the expression that mirrors my own feelings. I don't want him to hurt like I'm hurting. I don't want him to miss me like I'll miss him. I don't want him to be falling for me like I've been falling for him. I want him to be with Maggie right now. I want him to want to be with Maggie right now, because it would make this so much easier knowing our feelings were less a reflection of each other's and more like a one-way mirror. If this weren't so hard for him, it would make it easier for me to forget him, easier to accept his choice. Instead, it makes my heart hurt twice as much, knowing that our goodbye is hurting him just as much as it's hurting me. It's killing me, because nothing and no one could ever fit my life the way I know he could. I feel as though I'm willingly forking over my one chance for an exceptional life, and in return, I'm accepting a mediocre version without Ridge in it. My father's words ring in my head, and I'm beginning to wonder if he had a point after all. A life of mediocrity is a waste of a life. Our eyes remain in their silent embrace for several moments, until we both break our gaze, allowing ourselves to take in every last thing about each other. His eyes scroll carefully over my face, as if he's committing me to memory. His memory is the last place I want to be. I would give anything to always be in his present. I lean my head against my open bedroom door and stare at his hands still gripping the doorframe. The same hands I'll never see play a guitar again. The same hands that will never hold mine again. The same hands that will never again touch me and hold me in order to listen to me sing. The same hands that are suddenly reaching for me, wrapping themselves around me, gripping my back in an embrace so tight I don't know if I could break away even if I tried. But I'm not trying to break away. I'm reciprocating. I'm hugging him with just as much desperation. I find solace against his chest while his cheek presses against the top of my head. With each heavy, uncontrolled breath that passes through his lungs, my own breaths try to keep pace. However, mine are coming in much shorter gasps, thanks to the tears that are working their way out of me. My sadness is consuming me, and I don't even try to hold it in as I cry huge tears of grief. I'm crying tears over the death of something that never even had the chance to live. The death of us. Ridge and I remain clasped together for several minutes. So many minutes that I'm trying not to count, for fear that we've been standing here way too long for it to be an appropriate embrace. Apparently he notices this too, because he slides his hands up my back and to my shoulders, then pulls away from me. I lift my face from his shirt and wipe at my eyes before looking back up at him. Once we make eye contact again, he removes his hands from my shoulders and tentatively places them on either side of my face. His eyes study mine for several moments, and the way he's looking at me makes me hate myself, because I love it so much. I love the way he's looking at me, as if I'm the only thing that matters right now. I'm the only one he sees. He's the only one I see. My thoughts once again lead back to some of the lyrics he wrote. It's making me feel like I want to be the only man that you ever see. His gaze flickers between my mouth and my eyes, almost as if he can't decide if he wants to kiss me, stare at me, or talk to me. Sydney, he whispers. I gasp and clutch a hand to my chest. My heart just disintegrated at the sound of his voice. I don't speak well, he says with a quiet and unsure voice. Oh, my heart. Hearing him speak is almost too much to take in. Each word that meets my ears is enough to bring me to my knees, and it's not even the sound of his voice or the quality of his speech. It's the fact that he's choosing this moment to speak for the first time in 15 years. He pauses before finishing what he needs to say, and it gives my heart and my lungs a moment to catch up with the rest of me. He sounds exactly as I imagined he would sound after hearing his laughter so many times. His voice is slightly deeper than his laughter, but somewhat out of focus. His voice reminds me of a photograph in a way. I can understand his words, but they're out of focus. It's as if I'm looking at a picture, and the subject is recognizable but not in focus, similar to his words. I just fell in love with his voice, with the out-of-focus picture he's painting with his words. With him. He inhales softly, then nervously exhales before continuing. I need you to hear this, he says, cradling my head in his hands. I will never regret you. Beat, beat. Pause. Contract. Expand. Inhale. Exhale. I just officially lost the war on my heart. I don't even bother verbalizing a response to him. My reaction can be seen in my tears. He leans forward and presses his lips to my forehead. Then he drops his hands and slowly backs away from me. With each move he makes to pull apart from me, I feel my heart crumbling. I can almost hear us being ripped apart. I can almost hear his heart tearing in two, crashing to the floor right next to mine. As much as I know he should leave, I'm a breath away from begging him to stay. I want to fall to my knees right next to our shattered hearts and beg him to choose me. The pathetic part of me wants to beg him just to kiss me, even if he doesn't choose me. But the part of me that ultimately wins is the part that keeps her mouth shut, because I know Maggie deserves him more than I do. I keep my hands to my sides as he backs away another step, preparing to turn through my bedroom door. Our eyes are still locked, but when my phone sounds off in my pocket, I jump, quickly tearing my gaze from his. I hear his phone vibrate in his pocket. The sudden interruption of both of our phones is only obvious to me, until he sees me opening my cell phone, at the same time as he pulls his out of his pocket. Our eyes meet briefly, but the interruption of the outside world seems to have brought us both back to the reality of our situation, back to the fact that his heart belongs with someone else, and this is still goodbye. I watch as he reads his first text. I'm unable to take my eyes off of him in order to read mine, His expression quickly becomes tortured by whatever words he's reading, and he slowly shakes his head. He winces. Until this very moment, I'd never seen a heart break right before my eyes. Whatever he just read has completely shattered him. He doesn't look at me again. In one swift movement, he grips his phone tightly in his hand, as if it's become an extension of him, and he heads straight for the front door and swings it open. I step out into the living room, watching him in fear as I walk toward the front door. He doesn't even shut the door behind him as he takes the stairs two at a time, jumping over the edge of the railing to shave off another half a second in his frantic race to get to wherever it is he desperately needs to be. I look down at my phone and unlock the screen. Maggie's number shows as the last incoming text message. I open it and see that Ridge and I were the only recipients. I read it carefully, immediately recognizing the familiar string of words she's typed out to both of us. Maggie. Maggie showed up last night an hour after I got back to my room. I was convinced you were going to barge in and tell her what a jerk I am for kissing you. I immediately walk to the couch and sit, no longer able to support my body weight. Her words knocked the breath out of me, sucked the strength from my limbs, and robbed me of any sense of dignity I thought I had left. I try to recall the medium through which Ridge's words were initially typed. His laptop. Oh no. Our messages. Maggie is reading our messages. No, no, no. She won't understand. She'll only see the words that'll hurt. She won't be able to see how much Ridge has been fighting this for her. Another text shows up from Maggie, and I don't want to read it. I don't want to see our conversation through Maggie's eyes. Maggie. I never thought it was possible to have honest feelings for more than one person, but you've convinced me how incredibly wrong I was. I turn my phone on silent and toss it onto the couch beside me, then start crying into my hands. How could I do this to her? How could I do to her what was done to me, knowing it's the worst feeling in the world? I've never in my life known this kind of shame. Several minutes pass, full of regrets, before I realize the front door is still wide open. I leave my phone on the couch and walk to the door to shut it, but my eyes are drawn to the cab pulled up directly in front of our complex. Maggie is stepping out, looking up at me as she closes the door. I'm not at all prepared to see her, so I quickly step back out of her sight to regain my bearings. I don't know if I should go hide in my room or stay out here and try to explain Ridge's innocence in all of this. But how would I do that? She obviously read the conversations herself. She knows we kissed. She knows he admitted having feelings for me. As much as I can try to convince her that he did everything he could not to feel that way, it doesn't excuse the fact that the guy she's in love with has openly admitted his feelings for someone else. Nothing can excuse that, and I feel like complete shit for being a part of it. I'm still standing with the door open when she makes it to the top of the stairs. She's looking at me with a stern expression. I know she's more than likely here for anything other than me, so I take a step back and open the door wider. She looks down at her feet when she passes me, unable to continue the eye contact. I don't blame her. I wouldn't be able to look at me either. In fact, if I were her, I'd be punching me right now. She heads to the kitchen counter and she drops Ridge's laptop onto it without delicacy. Then she heads straight to Ridge's room. I hear her rummaging through stuff and she eventually comes out with a bag in one hand and her car keys in the other. I'm still standing motionless with my hands on the door. She continues to keep her eyes focused on the floor as she passes me again. But this time, she makes a quick movement with her hand and wipes away a tear. She walks out the door, down the stairs, and straight to her car, never speaking a word. I wanted her to tell me she hated me. I wanted her to punch me and scream at me and call me a bitch. I wanted her to give me a reason to be angry, because right now, my heart is breaking for her, and I know there isn't a damn thing I could say to make her better. I know this for a fact, because I've recently been in the same situation that Ridge and I have just put her in. We just made her a Sydney.
Ridge. The third and final text comes through when I pull up to the hospital. I know it's the final text because it's pulled from the conversation I had with Sydney less than 2 hours ago. It's the very last thing I messaged her. Maggie, don't thank me, Sydney. You shouldn't thank me because I failed miserably at trying not to fall in love with you. I can't take any more. I throw the phone into the passenger seat and exit the vehicle, then sprint into the hospital and straight up to her room. I push open the door and rush inside, preparing to do whatever I can to persuade her to hear me out. When I'm inside her room, I'm instantly gutted. She's gone. I press my palms against my forehead and pace the empty room, trying to figure out how I can take it all back. She read everything. Every single conversation I've ever had with Sydney on my laptop. Every single honest feeling I've shared. Every joke we've made, every flaw we've listed. Why was I so damn careless? 24 years I've lived without ever experiencing this type of hatred. It's the type of hatred that completely overwhelms the conscience. It's the type of hatred that excuses otherwise inexcusable actions. It's the type of hatred that can be felt in every facet of the body and in every inch of the soul. I've never known it until this moment. I've never hated anything or anyone with as much intensity as I hate myself right now.
Chapter 20. Sydney. Are you crying? Bridget asks without compassion as she comes through the front door. Warren follows closely behind her, but he pauses the second his eyes meet mine. I don't know how long I've been sitting motionless on the couch, but it still isn't long enough for reality to have been absorbed just yet. I'm still hoping this is a dream, or a nightmare. This isn't how things were supposed to turn out. Sydney? Warren says hesitantly. He knows something is wrong, because I'm sure my swollen, bloodshot eyes clearly give me away. I attempt to form an answer, but I fail to come up with one. As much a part of this as I am, I still feel that Ridge and Maggie's situation isn't mine to be sharing. Luckily, Warren doesn't have to ask me what's wrong, because I'm spared by Ridge's presence. He's barging through the front door, taking both Bridget's and Warren's attention off of me. He pushes between the two of them and heads straight for his room. He swings open the door, then comes out through the bathroom seconds later. He looks at Warren and signs something. Warren shrugs and signs back, but I can't follow their conversation at all. When Ridge responds again, Warren looks directly at me. What does he mean? Warren asks me. I shrug. I failed to learn sign language between now and the last time we spoke, Warren. How the hell should I know? I don't know where my unwarranted sarcasm is coming from, but I feel Warren should have anticipated that one. He shakes his head. Where's Maggie, Sydney? Warren points at the counter toward Ridge's computer. He says she had his computer, so she had to come by here after she left the hospital. I look at Ridge to answer, but can't deny the fact that jealousy is coursing through me at watching his reaction when it comes to Maggie. I don't know where she went. All she did was walk in, set your computer down, and grab her things. She's been gone for half an hour. Warren is signing everything I'm saying to Ridge. When he finishes, Ridge runs a frustrated hand through his hair, then takes a step toward me. His eyes are angry and hurt, and he begins signing with forceful movements of his hands. His obvious anger makes me wince, but his disappointment in me fills me with my own share of anger. He wants to know how you could just let her leave, Warren says. I immediately stand up and look Ridge directly in the eye. What did you expect me to do, Ridge? Lock her in the damn closet? You can't be mad at me for this. I'm not the one who failed to delete messages I wouldn't want someone else to read. I don't wait for Warren to finish signing for Ridge. I walk to my bedroom and slam the door behind me, then drop down onto my bed. Moments later, I hear the door to Ridge's bedroom slam shut too. The sounds don't stop there, though. I hear things crashing against his bedroom walls one by one as he takes his frustration out on any inanimate object in his path. I don't hear the knock through the sounds coming from Ridge's bedroom. My door opens, and Warren slips inside. He shuts my bedroom door, then leans his back against it. What happened? He asks. I turn my head to face the other direction. I don't want to answer him, and I don't want to look at him, because I know anything I say to him will only cause him to be disappointed in Ridge and me. I don't want him to be disappointed in Ridge. Are you okay? His voice is closer now. He sits down on the bed beside me and places a comforting hand on my back. The reassuring contact from him causes me to break down again as I bury my face in my arms. I feel as though I'm drowning, but I have no fight left to even bother coming up for air. You said something about messages to Ridge. Did Maggie read something that upset her? I turn my head back over and look up at him. Go ask Ridge, Warren. It's not my place to tell you Maggie's business. Warren purses his lips in a tight line, nodding slowly while he thinks. I kind of think it is your place, though, isn't it? Does it not have everything to do with you? And I can't ask Ridge. I've never seen him like this before, and frankly, I'm a little terrified of him right now. But I'm worried about Maggie, and I need you to tell me what happened, so I can figure out if there's anything I can do to help. I close my eyes, wondering how I can answer Warren's question with a simplified response. I open my eyes and look at him again. Don't be angry with him, Warren. The only thing Ridge has done wrong is fail to delete a few messages. Warren tilts his head and narrows his doubtful eyes. If that's the only thing Ridge did wrong, then why is Maggie avoiding him? Are you saying that the messages she read weren't wrong? Whatever has been going on between the two of you isn't wrong? I don't like the condescending undertone in his voice. I sit up on the bed and scoot back, putting space between the two of us as I respond. The fact that Ridge has been honest in his conversations with me is not something he did wrong. The fact that he has feelings for me also isn't wrong, when you know exactly how much he's fought those feelings. People can't control matters of the heart, Warren. They can only control their actions, which is exactly what Ridge did. He lost control once for 10 seconds, but after that, every single time temptation reared its ugly head, he walked in the other direction. The only thing Ridge has done wrong is fail to delete his messages, because by doing so he failed to protect Maggie. He failed to protect her from the harsh truth that people don't get to choose who they fall in love with. They only get to choose who they stay in love with. I look up at the ceiling and blink back tears. He was choosing to stay in love with her, Warren. Why can't she see that? This will kill him so much more than it's killing her. I fall back onto the bed, and Warren remains beside me, quiet and still. Several long moments pass, and then he stands and slowly makes his way to my bedroom door. I owe you an apology, he says. An apology for what? He drops his eyes to the floor and shifts his feet. I didn't think you were good enough for him, Sydney. He slowly brings his gaze back to mine. You are. You and Maggie both are. This is the first moment since meeting Ridge that I don't envy him. He leaves the room, somehow having made me feel the tiniest bit better and a whole hell of a lot worse. I continue to lie still on my bed, listening for the sound of Ridge's anger to return, but it doesn't. It's completely quiet throughout the apartment. The only thing any of us can hear is the lingering shattering of Maggie's heart. I pick up my phone for the first time since I put it on silent and see that I have a missed text from Ridge, sent just a few minutes ago. Ridge, I changed my mind. I need you to leave today.
Ridge. I pile a few things into a bag, hoping I'll actually need it once I get to her house. I have no idea if Maggie will even allow me to step through her front door, but the only thing I can do right now is be optimistic because the alternative is unacceptable. It just is. I refuse to accept that this is it. I know she's hurt, and I know she hates me right now, but she has to understand how much she means to me and how my feelings for Sydney were never intentional. I clench my fists again, wondering why in the hell I ever had those conversations with Sydney in the first place, or why I failed to delete them. I never thought Maggie would be in a position to read them. I guess in a way, I just didn't feel guilty. The way I felt towards Sydney wasn't something I wanted to happen, but the feelings are there, and refusing to act on them since our initial kiss has taken a hell of a lot of effort. In an oddly sadistic way, I've actually been proud of myself for being able to fight it the way I have. But Maggie won't see that side of it, and I completely understand. I know Maggie, and if she reads all the messages, she's more upset about the connection I've made with Sydney than she is over the fact that I kissed her. The feelings I have for Sydney aren't something I'm sure I can talk my way out of. I grab my bag and my phone and head into the kitchen to pack the laptop. When I reach the counter, I notice a piece of paper peeking out from the computer. I find a sticky note stuck to the screen. Ridge, it was never my intention to read your personal stuff, but when I opened your laptop, it was all right there in front of me. I read all of it, and I wish I never saw it. Please give me time to process everything before you show up. I'll contact you when I'm ready to talk in a few days. Maggie. A few days? God, please don't let her be serious. There's no way my heart will survive this for a few days. I'll be lucky if I make it through the end of today knowing how I've made her feel. I toss my bag back toward my bedroom door since I won't need it for a while. I lean forward in defeat and rest my elbows on the bar, crumpling the note up in my fist. I stare down at the laptop before me. Piece of shit computer. Why the hell didn't I have a password on it? Why the hell didn't I take it with me when I left the hospital? Why the hell didn't I delete everything? Why the hell did I even write anything to Sydney in the first place? I've never hated an inanimate object as much as I hate this computer. I slam the screen shut and bring my fist down on top of it with all my strength. I wish I could hear it crack. I wish I could hear the sound my fist makes each time I bring it down forcefully. I want to hear it crushed beneath my fist the same way my heart feels crushed inside my chest. I stand up straight and pick the laptop up, then slam it down on the bar. I see Warren exit his bedroom out of the corner of my eye, but I'm too pissed to care if I'm making too much noise. I continue to pick the laptop up and slam it against the bar over and over, but it doesn't diminish the hatred I feel for it in the least, and it also doesn't do enough damage to the casing. Warren walks toward the kitchen and heads to a cabinet. He reaches inside and grabs something, then walks over to me. I pause my attack on the computer and look up to see him holding out a hammer. I gladly take it and step back and bring the hammer down against the laptop with all my might. This time I can actually see the cracks appear with each hit. Much better. I hit it over and over and watch as pieces fly in all directions. I'm also leaving a hefty amount of damage on the bar beneath my mangled computer, but I don't give a shit. Countertops are replaceable. What this computer destroyed of Maggie isn't. When there isn't much left of the computer to destroy, I finally drop the hammer on the bar. I'm out of breath. I turn and slide down to the floor with my back against the cabinet. Warren walks around me and sits on the floor in front of me, resting his back against the wall behind him. "Feel better?" he signs. I shake my head. "I don't feel better. I just feel worse." Now I know for a fact that it's not the laptop I'm mad at. It's me. I'm mad at myself. "Anything I can do to help?" I ponder his question. The only thing that could help me get Maggie back is to prove to her that there's nothing going on between me and Sydney. In order to prove that to her, I need to not have any interaction with Sydney whatsoever. That's kind of hard with her in the very next room. "Can you help Sydney move?" I sign. "Today." Warren lowers his chin at my request, eyeing me with disappointment. "Today? Her apartment won't be ready for 3 more days. Besides, she needs furniture, and what we ordered this morning isn't even being delivered until the day she moves in." I pull my wallet out of my pocket and remove my credit card. "Take her to a hotel, then. I'll pay for her room until her apartment is ready. I need her out in case Maggie comes back. She can't be here." Warren takes my card and stares at it for several seconds before bringing his eyes back to mine. "This is kind of a shitty move, considering this is your fault. Don't expect me to be the one to ask her to leave today. You owe her that much." I have to admit, Warren's reaction surprises me. Yesterday, he seemed to hate Sydney. Today, he's acting as if he's protecting her. "I already told her I need her to leave today. Do me a favor and make sure she gets moved in okay this week. Get her everything she needs, groceries, extra furniture, whatever." I'm beginning to stand up when the door to Sydney's room opens. She's walking out backward, pulling both of her suitcases. Warren scrambles to his feet next to me, and as soon as she turns around and her eyes lock with mine, she freezes. The guilt over what I'm having her do hits me when I see the tears in her eyes. She doesn't deserve this. She hasn't done anything to deserve all that I've put her through. The way it makes me feel to know I've hurt her is exactly why I need her to leave, because I shouldn't care this much. But I do. God, I care about her so much. I break eye contact with her and look back to Warren. "Thank you for helping her," I sign. I head back to my room, not wanting to watch Sydney walk out the front door. I can't imagine losing both her and Maggie in the course of a few hours, but it's actually happening. Warren grabs my arm as I pass him, forcing me to turn and look at him. "You aren't even going to tell her goodbye?" he signs. I can't tell her goodbye when I don't really want her to leave. I continue toward my room, thankful that I can't hear the sound of the front door closing behind her when she leaves. I don't know if I could take it. I pick up my phone and lie down on my bed. I pull up Maggie's number and send her a text. "Me. I'll give you however much time you need. I love you more than you even realize. I'm not going to deny anything I said to Sydney because it was all true, especially the parts about you and how much I love you. I know you're hurt, and I know I betrayed you, but please, you have to know how much I've fought for you. Please don't end us like this." I hit the send button and pull the phone to my chest. Then I fucking cry.
Chapter 21. Sydney. "Let me get those," Warren says as he bends to pick up my suitcases. He carries them down the steps and I follow him. Once we make it to his car, I realize I don't even know where I'm going. I haven't thought this far ahead. As soon as Ridge told me he needed me to leave today, I just packed my things and walked out, without even a plan for what I'm going to do for the next 3 days. My new apartment isn't ready, but I'm wishing I could be in it. I want to be as far away as I can get right now, from Ridge and Maggie and Warren and Bridget and Hunter and Tori and everything and everyone. "Ridge wants me to take you to a hotel until your apartment is ready, but is there anywhere else you'd rather go?" Warren is now sitting in the driver's seat, and I'm in the front passenger seat. I don't even remember our getting into his car. I turn and look at him, and he's just staring at me. The car hasn't even been cranked yet. God, I feel so pathetic. I feel like a burden. It's laughable, isn't it? I say. What? I gesture to myself. This? I lean my head against the headrest and close my eyes. I should just go back home to my parents. I'm obviously not cut out for this. Warren sighs. Not cut out for what? College? Real life? I shake my head. Independence in general, really. Hunter was right when he told me I'd be better off living with him than on my own. He was right about that, at least. I've been in Ridge's life less than 3 months, and I've successfully ruined his entire relationship with Maggie. I look out the window, up to his empty balcony. I've also ruined his entire friendship with me. Warren cranks the car, then reaches over and squeezes my hand. Today is a really bad day, Sid. A really, really bad day. Sometimes in life we need a few bad days in order to keep the good ones in perspective. He lets go of my hand and backs out of the parking spot. And you've made it this long without having to go back to your parents? You can make it 3 more days. I can't afford a hotel, Warren. I spent my savings on furniture and the deposit for the new apartment. Just take me to the bus station. I'll go stay with my parents for a few days. I pick up my phone in order to bite the bullet and call them, but Warren pulls it out of my hands. First of all, you need to stop blaming yourself for what's happening with Ridge and Maggie. Ridge is his own person, and he knows right from wrong. He was the one in the relationship, not you. Second, you need to allow Ridge to pay for this hotel, because he's the one making you leave without a notice. As much as I love the guy, he sort of owes you big time. I watch the empty balcony as we drive away. Why do I feel like I've been taking Ridge's handout since the day I met him? I look away from the balcony, feeling the anger building in my chest, but I don't even know who I'm mad at. Love, maybe? I think I'm mad at love. I don't know why you feel the way you do, Warren says, but you need to stop. You've never asked any of us for a single thing. I nod, trying to agree with him. Maybe Warren is right. Ridge is just as guilty in this as I am. He's the one in the relationship. He should have asked me to leave as soon as he knew he was developing feelings for me. He also should have given me more than 5 minutes to move out. He made me feel like more of a liability than someone he's supposed to care about. You're right, Warren. And you know what? If Ridge is paying, I want you to take me to a really nice hotel. One with room service and a mini bar full of tiny bottles of Pine Sol. Warren laughs. That's my girl.
Ridge. It's been 72 hours. 3 days. Enough time for me to come up with even more things I need to say to Maggie. Enough time for Warren to let me know that Sydney is finally in her own apartment. He wouldn't tell me which one, but that's probably for the best. 72 hours has also been enough time for me to realize that I miss having Sydney in my life almost as much as I miss Maggie. And it's enough time to know that I'm not going another day without talking to Maggie. I need to know that she's okay. I've done nothing but pace this apartment since the moment I lost her. Since the moment I lost both of them. I pick up my phone and palm it for several minutes, too scared to text her. I'm afraid of what her response will be. When I finally do type out a text, I close my eyes and hit send. Me, are you ready to talk about it? I stare at my phone, waiting for her to respond. I want to know if she's okay. I want to be able to tell her my side. The fact that she's more than likely thinking the worst is killing me, and it feels as if I haven't been able to breathe since she found out about Sydney and me. Maggie, I'll never be ready, but it needs to be done. I'm home all night. As ready as I am to see her, I'm also scared to death. I don't want to see her heartbroken. Me. I'll be there in an hour. I grab my things and head straight out the door, straight back to the half of my heart that needs the most mending. I have a key to her place. I've had a key to her place for 3 years, but I haven't had to ring her doorbell in all that time. I'm ringing her doorbell right now, and it doesn't feel right. It feels as though I'm asking permission